Well, welcome to Rewatchable episode 85. We are up to the finale of Avatar The Last Airbender season 2. So we've got episodes 19, The Guru, and 20, The Crossroads of Destiny. I'm your host this week, Natalie. And if you'd like to reach us on the podcast, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, Twitter, re_watchable, or you can comment on this post on Hyperbole with all of your thoughts, feelings, opinions, you know, builds, criticisms, love, etc. All of that can come on the Hyperbole post, and we will hopefully be able to add your comments to a future episode. This week on the episode, we have myself, we have Karen and Brittany as newbies, and we have Michal as our other superfan. So, woo-hoo! Yay, team! So this is the end of Book Earth of Avatar The Last Airbender, chapter 19, The Guru. In this chapter, Aang drops Sokka off with his daddy and then goes to visit Guru Patik, who explains that it is surprisingly easy to undergo the emotional equivalent of years of therapy in a single afternoon. Aang finds out that there are 7 chakras and stuff, and he unlocks them all like no big, but then everything changes when we're forced to endure Aang's uncomfortably erotic visions of Katara. Yeah, okay, we're going to get through this. Aang's Katara senses start tingling, and he decides to dump his chances of entering the Avatar state because saving the world is irrelevant if he can't also save Katara's hot bod. This becomes just another example of why we shouldn't trust hormonal tween boys to make responsible, world-altering decisions. Meanwhile, in Ba Sing Se, the Earth King is also an idiot. He decides to tell total strangers the Avatar's master plan, so that's pretty much a bust. Sorry, brah. The good news is that Toph busts out like a beast by bending metal, and ugh, she's just the best. On the other side of town, Zuko is finally happy, and it's weird. He takes tea orders, smiling like a dormant serial killer, but watch out, because Katara drinks tea, so this basically means that everything is about to change. Hashtag Zutara 5 ever. Okay, so that's basically the goings-on of the Guru. So some discussion points about this, you know, some of the main plot lines. Zuko, after his, like, metamorphosis sleep, writhing around, sweatily, whatever that was, he's all chill now and he's happy and he wants to eat Iroh's food and he wants to serve tea and he's, like, really zen. It's really funny. It's really, I don't know how to process it properly, but it's weird. I don't know if I'd go as far as creepy, which has been the opinion given here.
It's super creepy.
Okay, I'd like to hear about why it's creepy. Karen, how did you find creepy Happy Zuko?
I didn't like it at all. It was super uncomfortable. It felt really fake to me, and I don't know, like, if it was or whatever was going on, but Zuko, for 2 entire seasons pretty much, has been this really moody kind of, you know, he's such a teenager, like, we always say that, and now he's, like, happy, and I don't know how to process it, but I think dormant serial killer is probably the best way to describe it.
Who else thought he was creepy? Everyone else?
Or, like, undercover serial killer.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I find it hilarious. I don't know if I find it creepy. I just find it awkward. But yeah, we can go with creepy. I do understand it. I think that there's some odd choices made by some people in this episode, including Iroh, when he is invited to the to serve tea at, you know, by the Earth King after we find out why that happens. So, dude, I understand that you're trying to make a new life for yourself, and I'm really happy that you're like, okay, so I had a royal palace, and that's cool, but I'm really happy doing this tea shop. I could make my life like this. You're still a fugitive. Don't go anywhere high profile, just saying. Like, maybe just don't do that. Like, you are still a public figure who might be recognized by someone, so maybe just don't do that, and maybe just be like, I'm gonna have my tea shop, but I'm not gonna, like, go to the palace and serve tea to the Earth King. I feel like that might be a bit of a risk. So yeah, we'll get to how that eventuates, but before that, Katara comes in wanting a table for 2, so I don't know if she's expecting a hot date or if she thinks Momo needs his own chair, but basically she comes into the tea shop to see Zuko and then freaks out.
First for Momo.
What, you think it was a table for 2 for her and Momo?
Absolutely.
Yes, of course.
That's not
Momo has good manners.
I suppose. I mean, yeah. We know Momo's not a person, right? He's not sentient. He's a pet. Like,
what? I don't know.
He's sentient. He's Momo.
All those
he saved their ass
when he was sick.
Okay, Momo's not sentient.
I'm pretty. I argue.
Yes, he is.
he's sentient to the point of an animal. He's not sentient like he's a bee. Like, he's not like... He's a pet. Like, he's an animal. He's not a
He figured out where... He basically figured out where Appa was.
Yeah, but you see that with animals and stuff all the time. He's not just, like, a sentient animal.
Team Momo, okay?
Oh, I love Momo, but he ain't like, a person... You know how, like, sometimes an animal, has a personality...
He's Momo just has a personality.
This is coming across very badly. Okay. No, he has an animal personality, as opposed to, like, I'm trying to think of movies with animals and people where the animals are sentient as well. Like, you know, oh, God. Like, Entangled. He's not like the horse in Tangled. He doesn't understand as much as the horse in Tangled, if you know what I mean. He's a pet. He's not, like, a thing that needs his own chair at the tea shop, is my point. Anyway, so, you know, please contact us if you have very conflicting opinions about the amount of personhood that Momo has, because I am curious about this. I think Appa has more personhood than Momo. Appa is more of a sentient being in an animal form than
I would Momo. Agree with that.
I would definitely disagree. I don't think so. I would disagree with that.
What?
Okay. I think Momo...
Appa!
I don't think they're on equal ground at all, but I think that Momo has a lot more than you're giving him credit for. That's all.
All right. I'm here for the opinions on Momo, if anyone has any of them. Anyway, the point is, okay, so we have a comment here. Don't lie. You also just held your breath, squealed like a 22-year-old at a Joe Bros concert when you realized Katara was about to walk into his tea shop. Hashtag meet cute. Well,
definitely.
I did. But did all of you?
I did.
Yeah, I totally did.
Well, it was weird. Yes, it was definitely a, like, oh my God moment. But it was...
I mean, yeah. Not as much as the next episode, but this episode, yeah. it started the butterflies, and the next episode it was like, dear. Boom.
Oh, dear.
I'm so glad we're on the same page, Brittany, because I feel really outnumbered.
I know. It's not outnumbered, I don't think. I think
all the newbies are totally here for it.
Okay.
Okay, but I didn't get it at all the first time I watched the show, but I mean, there were a lot of ship wars, and I was not involved in any active ship wars, but there were certainly people who didn't get it, because there were enough ship wars to have sides. But yes. Hashtag Zutara5ever is not a hashtag that Natalie Fisher will ever be using. So, yeah, that was not something of my design, obviously. I think that we all probably know whose design that was. And that's fine. There is a lot of Zutara in this couple of episodes. I just always found it really just like, I felt nothing. I feel nothing. You know, whatever. But anyway, the point is she did, and then she freaks out, and she's like, oh my God, oh my God. And at first I'm like, Katara, calm down. Just let them live their lives. But then she does sort of go on, you do go on to kind of realize that she thinks that they're undercover serial killers, like that they're undercover to invade and all of that kind of thing. She doesn't realize that they're just like innocently living their lives. I would have been pretty pissed off if she had just, you know, tried to dob them in just purely for existing, but... Given that she then finds out about all of the other things, it's, you know, it's a fair assumption to make, just one that I'm not really here, have much patience for. When she walked in, I suppose, did anyone have a strong, you guys all had strong reactions, I suppose? How about you, Michal, at this point, as an old bee, as I like to say, you sort of a fan of this moment?
I'd forgotten basically about what happened here, and that they had this little awkward meet cute thing. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was fun.
The other big issue, obviously, Katara runs off, and then we sort of also discover that there are other Fire Nation issues afoot. In that the Earth King, because he's an idiot, he basically reveals the entire plan to his trusted advisors, the Kyoshi Warriors, who is, you know, the dangerous ladies, and It's really not that smart. Like, no wonder he is, you know, was so easily overthrown. He has absolutely, you know, no common sense or power, the Earth King. Like, I don't even know how he became king. So we're just going to read out Ariana's she's got some feelings about this Earth King situation. saying, no wonder the Dai Li's North Korean Nazi equivalents took over. Nobody has their eyes on the ball. Stop playing with your bear and get your head in the game. How many sports metaphors do I have to employ? Evil is afoot. You don't even realize you're Cuba. Which is maybe a little bit intense and political, but it's valid. He's an idiot. Like, he is, you know, they say that he's a total figurehead. He's never left the palace. He was probably, you know, literally just this royal family of inbred, like, weirdos that love bears, apparently. And, yeah, and he's very naive, very innocent. And I feel a little bit sorry for him, but also he mega sucks. So, yeah, how did you react to this, Brittany, with the whole... just him just being like, yeah, this is what we're doing, cool, to Azula, etc.
He's an idiot. Like, as I was so frustrated with him, but I understood it. I feel like he himself has been brainwashed by the Dai Li just to be like so isolated and living in this like room with padded walls with like access to a bear pit that he doesn't know any better. And again, the show's doing one of the things where it's like making a huge statement, which I appreciate because, you know, as a 24-year-old watching it, it could get kind of boring if the king was just, like, an idiot because he's an idiot.
Yeah. You kind of see a lot of where it comes from without them kind of flat out telling you, you know, just through little bits of dialogue and kind of personality, you kind of get the impression of, you know, how that has happened and his entire circumstance. And I don't think he's bad, but, you know, or anything. I'm not like, oh, you're evil. You've ruined everything, Earth King. I mean, he has a little
bit, and I agree with that. I don't think he's bad either.
Yeah, but it is super, like, it's a very good representation of a very, you know, ridiculous situation, basically, and one that used to be, probably still is in places and in all sorts of circumstances, but certainly used to be quite true in terms of royal figureheads and stuff like that. Karen, how about you with the Earth King reaction and the bear and everything that's going on with, I suppose, the Kyoshi fire girls, you know, sort of messing around with him? How did it make you feel to see this unfold?
You know, I actually don't hate the Earth King. Like, I got a little frustrated, but I never really blamed that on him. I blamed that on the Dai Li. And I think, yeah, he's just super naive and brainwashed. And I think he had an easy job up until this point where he didn't really have to worry about anything. And he was just a figurehead and he got to just play with his bear and everything was happy rainbows and stuff. And now that things are starting to get real, I can understand that he doesn't really know what he's doing. So I actually like the Earth King. I think that there's a lot of potential for him to turn things around and do what's right, even though it's a lot harder. And I don't know if everyone would make that decision, but I feel like he would. Like, he does want to try to do the right thing.
Yeah. I mean, as I said, I do like him and the dumb bear, but yeah, it is very, very frustrating. And just, it's just like he played, you know, into their hands, and he's just so naive and like childish, and it's just, anyway, big development this episode is obviously Toph getting captured by those two idiots that have been chasing her the whole time, which, by the way, don't understand. Did they fake that letter from her mother? And, like, you know, like, is that kind of what happened, that they lured her and then captured her? Are they still trying to capture her for a reward, or are they working directly with her parents? But anyway, they capture her and put her in a metal box, and she basically invents or is able to process bending metal as an earthbender, which to me, you know, a lot of people, you know, it's just like flat out, this is so cool, etc., which I'm sure that we'll get to in a second. For me, what I find really interesting is it's the first, the Avatar world, the current show is set in quite a, not primitive, but like a medieval kind of level of technology. The Fire Nation has like quite good industrial weapons, but a lot of the other places don't have anything industrial at all, basically. It's a bit of a mix. And using bending in different ways, I think, is one of the biggest ways that's going to develop their society, basically. Like, being able to just be like, oh, earthbenders can only bend rocks. It's like, oh, no, how about that they try and explore their craft and specify, like, bending, you know, the different minerals of things? Or how about, you know, waterbenders, you know, do gardening stuff with the water inside of plants and stuff? I think that the best – way for this society to develop is through sort of perfecting bending before beyond the four base elements, because as we learn, the elements make up everything. And no, not to spoil massive things, but Legend of Korra is set about 70 years after this series, and the development in Legend of Korra of the, you know, the amount of technology and stuff that society has is far beyond a 70-year gap in our world, if you know what I mean. And I think that this moment of Toph metal bending is the very start of all of that, basically, in terms of society developing and changing. She basically just started like an industrial revolution. So I think that that's kind of awesome. Anyway, how do you guys feel about the metal bending? Mikhail, are you able to sort of give any comments on that in regards to, I guess, Korra or anything like that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point, and I do think it is kind of the beginnings of, you know, the Industrial Revolution. Like, obviously they have metal, they use metal, but this enables people to use it in completely different ways. I mean, like, they were a society that was sort of stuck in, you know, building out of stone and building
rocks. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this kind of opens up a whole new, you know, possibility, assuming anyone else can do it, you know. It's not necessarily a guarantee. But yeah, I mean, I just think it's so awesome. I mean, I love the scene, the way it's cut with, you know, with the guru and saying that everything is one. And, you know, and that's really kind of what's at the heart of metal bending, that you kind of realize that there are pieces of earth in metal, you know. And yeah, and I love the way that it's all presented, and just Toph, like, kind of getting to succeed in this way that is so, like, so unbelievably badass, you know, but, and yet also kind of quiet, you know, because nobody else really sees it. So it's, you know, just this kind of, like, amazing, both, like, huge earth-shaking moment, but also just a personal triumph.
Yeah. Brittany, how about you? I would like to get everyone's opinions on metal bending. Was this something you ever expected to see, like this kind of development of bending, besides, you know, rocks, water, fire, you know, that kind of thing?
Well, I thought about it a lot after Ariana was, like, live tweeting her watching this, and she made a comment being like, I'm calling it now, like, Toph's going to be able to bend metal. And I didn't really think about it until actually last week's conversation, when we were talking about how Ariana would, like, you know, suck all the life out of people by taking the water out of their bodies. Oh, so I was thinking, I'm like, well, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Like, there should be a way to bend metal, and there should, because, like they point out in this episode, there is, like, elements of rock in there.
Yeah.
And so, like, with water bending, they should be able to explore different things too. Because, like, yeah, they did that one thing with the cloud that one time, but there's, like, water everywhere. Like, they should be able to tap into that. So the metal bending, I thought, was really cool. I'm glad that they're able to do that now. Well, Toph is, but.
No, that's the exact point, I think, is that, like, as I said, this isn't a primitive society, but they have a primitive attitude towards bending. Not that many people have explored the idea outside of, I can only do things with pure water or a lump of rock, if you know what I mean, as opposed to thinking about how their element is in other things that they could affect, like fine-tuning it. And I think that this is, like, one of the starts of fine-tuning it, obviously, which is really, really cool. And so, I don't know, like, it's interesting to think what else they might be able to do. And Ariana is very, very gross about her opinions with using water bending, but she might have a fun time in season 3, because there will certainly be, you know, not repercussions, but this fine-tuning of bending is certainly not the, you know, we're starting something here, basically, of the fine-tuning of where your element is. So, should be good. Karen, how about you? What would you like to try and bend, given that it doesn't just have to be a piece of rock or a water out of a river?
Oh, gosh, I don't know, but you recently told me that I was an airbender, so.
I think that's true. I think if you're going to be, I think that there's a pretty big conversation we can have about the bending and the elements now that we know about the chakras as well. I think that that's actually a really important element. So, yes, we can definitely talk about that. But as an airbender, you know, you can do a lot with air, pretty much. You can.
I mean, I would just fly everywhere, to tell you the truth. Like, that would be so awesome. But in terms of the metal bending, I mean, I'm kind of in an unfortunate position because I do have to edit a lot of the articles on Hypable. And so I do know some things about Korra. Nothing big, I don't think. And I do know some things, having read some Avatar stuff as well. But so I knew metal bending was a possibility. I didn't know it would be Toph, and I didn't know it would be now. So I was really excited, and I was really, really glad that she was able to get out of that metal cage, because I think she's a great ally for the gang, and I would have been super bummed if she had just been carted off back to her parents.
Yeah. We've seen a few tiny elements of it, like with those swamp people and even sand benders who must be earth benders who have specified in sand, which makes me think, oh, like, God, if you can combine elements and, like, have, like, a glass-blowing bender or something like that. Like, I love thinking about that kind of thing. You know, just the ways that you could combine bending elements, you know, or two people, you know, oh, I've got an earth bender and a fire bender together, and we together we're this master glass-making team. Like, I want an episode about that, basically. So I love the idea of fine-tuning the elements. But, yes, there is a lot more of that to come. And, yeah, Korra, as I said, the amount of advancement is pretty huge, which, and I think it does all start here. So that's cool. We'll go on to the Powerpuff Girls, the dangerous ladies. Ariana has given the opinion that they make her weirdly emotional with their female support system, which, I mean, I don't really have anything to build on that. I don't really think that they're necessarily, you know, I don't think they're that good at supporting each other. I think Ty Lee doesn't know how to say bad things, so she just sort of compliments Azula at all times, and May doesn't really care. But yeah, we do see them kind of plotting together and, trying to take over from inside the Fire Nation. We've seen them for nearly all season now. So, you know, the newbies, Brittany and Karen especially, how are you feeling about this gang and their friendship at the moment, basically, the three girls? Brittany, where are you at with them?
I mean, I don't think it's much of a friendship. Mainly Azula, I don't feel like she cares about them at all. Like, if they were to die, she'd be like, all right, whatever, moving on. But I do like them working together. I liked them together from when she was recruiting them and, like, their first battle where they all worked together, because I think that they each have something to give. But May, I mean, she is just... She does not want to do anything. She annoys me, but I think they're okay. I like...
hang on. Those are fighting words, my dear. Those are fighting words.
I'm willing to fight. I would take May's position and just sit in a corner and be like, okay, whatever. That's my opinion. I'm not getting my hands dirty.
She would decapitate you with a blade.
I'm not sure why. It would be over. My boredom would be over.
Yeah. Oh, someone died. A small thrill. Like, it's, I love her.
But I like the Kyoshi Warriors better in the female support system category, if we had to, like, make this, like, an Emmys or something. I think the Kyoshi Warriors would
Avatar
win
Emmys.
Out.
Emmys, yeah. That's true, they are pretty...
Best female group.
Mikhail, if you're able to hear us, you seem to... like May in general, but the girls at this point as well, the dangerous ladies, do you kind of agree, you know, about them not being friends, or do you think that, you know, like, why do you think they're even doing this? Like, what is going on with them, in your opinion?
I mean, I don't think either Ty Lee or May is used to having choices where Azula is involved. I think that this is their pattern, that, you know, Azula comes in, tells them what to do, and they do it. You know, I think May's little rebellions are actually really interesting in that way. You know, that she, like, she doesn't go into the slurry stuff, and she doesn't hear, you know, she's just like, oh, whatever, take the bear. Like, I don't care. You know, that's later, sorry. But, you know, I that's partly why, like, Ty Lee, sweet as she is, kind of annoys me, because she sort of doesn't try and shake out of that, whereas May is sort of like, I can't do anything about this, but, like, it's, like, quietly pissing me off a little bit, you know, and... Yeah, so, I mean, I think that both of them are stuck in this pattern where, you know, I mean, being close to somebody who's really dangerous has its benefits and its detriments, and I think, you know, I think that they're a very good example of that, basically.
Yeah, I'm always curious about Ty Lee, if she is genuine in what she does to Azula, if she's totally naive, or if she's just the best at playing the game, basically. I do sometimes wonder if she's like, you know, that she's really good at putting on a face and playing the game and really good at self-preservation. But yeah, I do like them, and yeah, at this point I think they are getting a bit done with Azula's plans, but you know, I agree about them not really having explored their choices too much before, so we should have to see about that. You also got to see Sokka reunite with his dad. I guess we see his dad for the first time. Basically, he goes in and meets the warriors, the water tribe fleet, when Aang goes off to his bison retreat at the Eastern Earth Temple. Which was nice. It was cute. You know, Sokka got to go. You know, nothing really happened. Like, you know, he just saw what they were doing with their small fleet and how they were contributing to the war. And then Aang picked him up again, and they go home. So, Karen, did you like seeing Sokka's dad, who is clearly also a bit of a ham like he is, or did you kind of think there was going to be more to this?
I definitely thought there was going to be more to it. I did like his father's personality because, yeah, you can see where Sokka gets it from. So that part was cool. But otherwise, I was kind of bored. And I know, like, Ariana says in here that she was kind of bummed that there was no drama and it was anticlimactic. And I kind of feel the same way because they kept mentioning their father. And I thought, like, something was going to happen, like he had already been dead, or perhaps, like, he wasn't the person that they thought he was when they were younger, and we would see a totally different side of him as them seeing him when they're adults or at least like older teenagers. And it was none of that. And so I'm kind of glad there was no drama because I don't think we need that at this point. But I was also like, okay, was that really it? Was that the reunion? Like, it was, yeah, a little anticlimactic.
Yeah, I kind of agree, and I kind of mainly liked the bit at the beginning where Katara's like, no, you go, I'll stay here, and then Sokka kind of freaks out. I thought that was kind of my favorite part of that whole storyline, basically. The biggest part of the episode, though, was the chakras, and that basically Aang's therapy / tutoring / healing / session / whatever you want to call it at the temple with Guru Patik. So we learn about basically the avatar state and the body within this universe and the chakras. The chakras being the, I suppose, what are they, pools of energy within the body or whatever. And I just, yeah, basically want to talk pretty intensely about this because this is the bit to me when you watch Avatar. This is the scene where no matter what you think about, like, oh, I'm an airbender, etc., you don't. No, not that we know. This is all very serious business, of course. You have to know about this to be able to class yourself as an element in this universe, if you know what I mean. And in my opinion, anyway. So, yeah, I guess because we have the Earth Chakra, which is basically based on survival and blocked by fear. Water Chakra, water element, which is based through pleasure and blocked by guilt. Fire chakra, which is based by willpower, blocked by shame. Air chakra, which is based by love and blocked by grief. And there's three others, sound, light, and thought chakras, which are all have a base and a block as well. So just going around the group, which one did you think was the most interesting? Like, Karen, how about you to start with?
I don't really know. I actually, like, aside from the specific ones, what I found most interesting was the description of, and the visual of, like, one getting blocked and it blocks off the other ones, and he removed that piece of, like, seaweed or whatever it was, the moss from the little stream, and then the rest of the pools filled up. I thought that was a really great way of visualizing the chakras and showing how one affects the other.
Yeah. One thing about that that I always found interesting was the order, because, look, don't want to sit here and shit talk anyone who likes the Earth, Earth Nation, but the Earth Nation in general is kind of portrayed in Avatar as the most, like the most sort of base level society. You have people being the most, there's obviously a lot of development, you know, with the cities and stuff, but it's, you always see that the Earth Nation people are like, because there's lots of them, they're kind of like quote unquote like sheep, they're kind of like, you know, stubborn and like dumb sometimes. You see a lot of Earth Nation communities who are very you know, they are the most base instinct. And so I find it interesting that they are the most base instinct chakra of like survival and fear. Like that's the base human instinct and Earth. It's very like, and then it sort of goes through the chakras. And I always found that really interesting. And I liked that. But Brittany, how about you with the chakras? Which one did you find the most interesting?
Well, I do have one that I want to talk about, but first just a note on the Earth. I know I tweeted this, but did anyone else like think that the creator of Divergent was like, yes, I have found a way to incorporate Trish's fear, Trish's like fear, like whatever they're called, because when Aang was like trying to like figure out what his fear was, and then like another person appeared and he's like, none of this is real, I was like, oh my god, I just see Shailene Woodley popping up and being like, this isn't real, and like breaking the water thing. I was like, oh, that's so cheap. They definitely, whether the creators of Divergent wanted to admit it or not, they stole that particular moment from Avatar.
Oh wow. But I haven't seen it, but you know, I'd believe it because this show
it was too dead on. But anyway, I thought that overall, as for all the chakras, I thought it was too easy to get through. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? It was sort of just like, oh, I've identified that
you have to sit like, there and meditate. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it should have, like, maybe if they had time-lapsed it, like, it felt more time-lapsed that he was going through this, I would have bought it more, as opposed to it being like, it felt like it was just in one day and they just kind of, like, moved places. So I think maybe if they, like, wrote it to where it was, I'm sure it was over a longer period of time, but it just didn't feel that way watching it.
See, I get what you mean, and I think that there's two takes on it. I think that there's the option that he's doing this right now. He's doing this right now as a permanent thing, like, oh, I've cleared all my chakras permanently, or that Guru Patik is teaching him this quick meditation thing that he has to do every time he wants to go into the Avatar state. And I do agree that it's probably a bit quick for the first time, but I think that this is like a process that he's meant to be able to just sit down and do, like tick off, okay, letting that go, 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 Avatar state, if you know what I mean, as opposed to it being like one permanent process for him. That's because yeah, he's can never going to have like, earthly attachments or guilt or whatever, you know, like it's learning an ongoing process.
Yeah, and I definitely get that, because later on in life he could have another like fear that comes up that he needs, but he knows how to get through it really quickly. Like he can identify it and move on. But if I had to pick one that I really liked going through, I think it would be the thought chakra, because while I don't agree that Katara is the earthly attachment, I mean, I guess it is for him. He's only 12. He doesn't have much. I thought Appa maybe more so than Katara, but
aww, I wish it was Appa.
But I like the concept of the thought. Yeah, I just like the concept of the thought chakra. Like that's letting go of earthly attachments, because that's a huge thing for anyone to think about. Like, sure, like, you can identify everything, but identifying the earthly attachment, at least for me, that was the one that made me think the most.
Yeah. I do find that interesting as well, and it's a pretty harsh thing to do. And Guru Patik didn't really put up his hand and said, you don't have to let go of her forever. You just have to do it for the meditation to go into the Avatar state, guy. It's okay. But yeah, I don't know. Michal, how about you in terms of the interest in the chakras? Which one sort of struck a chord with you?
You know, I don't know. It's an interesting thing. When I first watched this, I hadn't heard of chakras. You know, I do yoga fairly frequently, so that's something that comes up every so often. But I haven't, you know, done any serious study. I guess the only thing I really have to say is that it's interesting that they tell you where all the chakras are except for the second one, because the second one is actually in your sexual organs, and it's connected to pleasure, and it's blocked by guilt, and I think they handled it very, you know, very neatly. You know, you don't notice, and you just kind of like go through it. And I mean, it's a cool way to, you know, involve this other element of spirituality. I know that the co-creators are very, you know, into
into Eastern teachings and this kind of, you know, spirituality. And I like that they kind of brought something from our world into that. So yeah, I mean, I didn't really have a favorite chakra, but yeah, that.
No, good point about the water chakra. But
yeah.
But yeah, just for anyone who happens not to know, I have no idea how known it is or not. The chakras are real, or I mean, real is a matter of belief, but it's not something invented for the show. This is a real process in Eastern Eastern meditation and Eastern teachings and religion and body stuff. So it is a real thing, and they might have slightly different names and stuff like that, but it's very much the same thing. So yeah, that's not an Avatar only thing, just in case anyone out there didn't know that, or if anyone's young or doesn't have any exposure to that. But yeah, I think I did know about chakras and stuff before I watched Avatar, but I always enjoy this bit, mainly because we get to talk about what chakra that we relate to the most. As I said, this to me is really important in defining what makes you a bender, like more than just, oh, I'd like to be able to do the fire or the water. It's to do, I think, with the personality. And I think that the strength and the block of each element really ties into what kind of bender you would identify as. For me personally, this is why I know I'm a fire bender. Like, this is exactly, shame is my 100% biggest weakness. I have the weirdest shame about the weirdest things that you would never think that you could have shame about. It's my 100% biggest block, and willpower is certainly probably my biggest strength. And that's 100% why I would say that I was like the fire element in terms of this show. But did anyone have that kind of reaction to hearing a bit more about like the strengths and blocks of an element? Has it made you kind of identify more with one as a bender, as a potential pretend bender or anything like that? So Brittany, how about you?
Well, I don't know. All right. I would have to say fire, even though I really don't think I'm a fire bender at all, only because like my gut tells me a lot about how I'm feeling, and it's, since it's blocked in the stomach, that's what made it made it seem like I would have to be a firebender. But I feel like I'm so not a firebender.
And that was the other thing for me. Sorry to I was just like putting my hands up and being like, yes, because I actually have an autoimmune stomach problem as well. Like, I have a gut, I have a lot of things that go on with my stomach as well. So I was just like, oh, this fits so well. But I don't know. I'm sure there's more to it, and you can decide whatever you want in terms of what kind of bender you are. But for me, this really was quite important to me when I saw it. But yeah. Karen, how about you? What did you think about the, did you relate particularly to a chakra in terms of how you operate, or how, you know, what it made you think about the elements? Do you kind of see any of those, those kind of traits in the benders that we've seen so far?
I don't know which one I would relate to. I was sitting here looking at the different ones that you read off, and it's like, the ones that deals with, you know, I'd be like, okay, well, I can sort of relate to that. But then the blocked by, you know, it's like, well, I don't really have a whole lot of problem with that. Like, for me, like the sound chakra, like truth is very, very important to me. But if it's blocked by lies, does that mean like I would lie a lot, or that I have issues with people who lie?
I think it's sort of just what brings it down, basically, just what blocks it, basically. Like, yes, that if you are caught up in whatever that is, if you are caught up in whatever that is, then you're not able to tap into the good part of it, basically.
Okay, well, then this one's definitely mine then, because I just realized this. Truth is very important to me. I don't like lying. I don't lie. I try very, very hard not to lie, and I don't appreciate it when other people lie. And it says that the location is in the throat. And I have anxiety, and a lot of people, their anxiety manifests in panic attacks where they have trouble breathing. Mine manifests in my throat, where it feels like somebody is choking me. Mm. So I feel like the sound chakra is definitely the one that I probably relate to the most.
Cool. Everyone's getting.
I feel like I should share something about myself now, but
just tell us what you think. Yeah, we don't have to be getting therapy. You know, look, you know, we do have all cats. This is a part of the document that's the free therapy session. So that's what's happening now, apparently. But just share what you'd like to, or if you have a particular chakra that interested you, I suppose, in terms of, or even, as I said, like, you know, if you saw these qualities as a wider trait in, like, one of the nations of people or the benders in the show, I suppose.
I don't know. I mean, again, I feel like whichever one is, like, fire-related and kind of relates to, like, anger and whatever, that is something I feel, like, a connection to.
Mm-hmm.
So I should probably watch it again and be like, oh, that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just, like, I kind of never really expected with the fire one, like, obviously we've seen Zuko and his honour and shame, etc., but, like, that the shame would be the biggest issue for that one, and that was just like, oh, it hit me hard. But yeah, I love the chakra talk, so yeah. Obviously one of the biggest moments is the love, the air chakra, which is about love and blocked by grief, and we kind of see in that moment Aang seeing all of his dead people that he knew, like the entire air nomad society who he knew, and you know, and we don't really spend a lot of time thinking about, like, how, you know, he sort of loved and lost all of those people, and that was sad, wasn't it?
That was really sad. I think that was my favorite one, just like seeing him. Mm-hmm. Him deal with that guilt and that sadness and, like, the, you know, the tears that he's, like, unconsciously crying at the end, I found very moving.
Yeah. And then we've already sort of mentioned a little bit about, what, you know, if it was too easy to take down all of the chakras, and, you know, is that because he's, like, Zen as an airbender? I'm going to say probably, because out of all of the nations, you know, out of all of the societies, he probably was raised on, like, doing this kind of thing, like, you know, meditation and, you know, practicing that kind of lifestyle pretty consistently, as opposed to, like, you know, you got some random earthbender who's just like, yeah, sit down and open your chakras, and they're just like, fuck you. Sorry. But so I think that might have been a little bit easier, but as we said, I don't know if this is meant to be, like, this grueling process that takes, like, a week or a month to learn, or if it's meant to be something that you kind of do in 30 seconds every time you need to do it, basically. So, I don't know, did you think, I know Brittany sort of said it was too easy. Karen, did you think it was too easy, or how did you sort of feel about that?
Yeah, I guess it sort of went by pretty fast. And, I mean, I guess it was easy in terms of the time limit, but emotionally, I'm not sure if it was super easy, just because he did have to let go of a lot of things, a lot of fears about outside elements, but also himself and what he's capable of and everything. So I found that sort of, like, I would think it'd be kind of emotionally draining, which could make it a lot tougher maybe than we realize, since we're just watching him do this. But I did like how at the end he couldn't really give up that final piece, that Katara, because I think that would have definitely made it too easy, but he did end up struggling with it.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, it's not like he's, like, giving all these things up forever. It's just, like, in the moment he's kind of releasing, you know, all of these emotions away from him to not care about for that second. That being said, do we think that Aang's single-minded obsession with Katara, you know, is weird and creepy? Does it make anyone uncomfortable? Like, is this, like, too much, like, romantic love or obsession or, like, neediness or, you know, dependence, or do you think it's cute and adorable and that they're OTP forever, basically? Michal, how are you, like, at this point in the show, like, with Aang and Katara? Like, did you kind of find this weird, or do you sort of take it as, like, oh yeah, this is normal, that's his most important person, that's fine?
I mean, I feel like that's what the show has shown us, you know. I don't think that, like, I've long resigned myself to this. So yeah, Aang is desperately in love with Katara, even though he's 12, and whatever. So that's the thing.
and whatever. Fair enough. Brittany and Karen, as newbies and Zutara enthusiasts, how did you feel about the, you know, Aang, like that Katara is the one basically ruining the universe from, you know, getting hold of Aang's powers? Like, no, that's a bit fair. That's a bit mean. It's not fair to blame her, but just Aang's obsession with her, you know, do you think it's healthy? Do you think it's weird? Karen, how about you?
I think it's fairly normal. He's 12. I think, you know, how much experience has he had with girls? She's a little bit older. She's very loyal and faithful to him and to his cause. And I mean, she's pretty and smart and she can waterbend. So I can understand why he would be attracted to her. I don't know if this is like end game or anything like that. I don't feel like it is, just because I don't really see Katara feeling the same things that he does, but I do think it's cute, and I think that it makes sense he'd be afraid to give her up, but, you know, in the end we realize that he is capable of doing that when he has to be. But yeah, I mean, I don't mind it. I'm not really into it, but I don't mind it.
Brittany, how about you?
I mean, I mind it, but it's also like not like ruining the show for me. It makes complete sense. Katara's the only one who he kind of like sure, Sokka's there, but like it's Sokka, and he's only really had one person he can trust. So I think he's putting too much emphasis on it having to be romantic. Like, I think he's not looking at it as she could just be this really good friend and like
person regardless.
Yeah, and that's totally fine. I would be on board with that, but we did not need another flash of her looking all pretty and sparkly coming out of like a waterfall. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like I was like, oh gosh. So but yeah, I mean, I get it.
No, agreed. So just quickly running down favorite little scenes. As we mentioned, one of mine was the chakra description leading into metal bending. Like, you know, when he's talking about everything, you know, being connected, and then we kind of, they don't spell it out, they don't have Toph go, oh, there's little bits of earth in the metal, maybe I can do this, if you know what I mean. They don't have that spelled out, but you see exactly the process, and I really love that. But I also really love Iroh at the start being really confused by Zuko, like, wanting to eat his soup and being chill and stuff like that, because it's just funny to me. But, yeah, do we want to run down the list in order for favorite scenes? So, Karen?
Mine was just the description of the chakras, like I said before, when he removed that piece from the stream and you actually physically saw how they flowed from one pool to the other. I just thought that was really clever.
Yeah. And Michal, how about you?
Top metal bends, obviously. You guys are all wrong. Yeah. Congratulations.
You have picked the only thing that matters.
You took mine, so.
Oh, okay. All right, fine.
So I had to pick another one.
And I saved it for the quote, so.
Oh, good. Brittany, what about scenes for you, though?
I didn't get to comment earlier, but I enjoyed Sokka going to visit his dad. I'm kind of glad, like, that at least he has that little boost. I think he needed that. And he needed his dad to say, like, when they were like, oh, the men get ready to fight. And Sokka was like, oh, well, what about me? And he was like, well, you're a man, aren't you? Like, I think Sokka needed that. And it was just enough. Like, we didn't need to dwell on it too much. And it could be boring, but I think that it was good in the end for Sokka. So I enjoyed that.
Cool. We'll go through quotes as well. Mine was in the chakra process and the letting go and Katara and earthly attachments, etc. Just when Guru Patik is telling Aang to let go, you know, that it's bad, that he has an earthly attachment, and he goes, three chakras ago, that was a good thing. And I don't know, it's not that I care about his attachment to Katara, I just thought the phrasing was hilarious. So, yes. Karen?
Mine was when the guru is like, Aang, tell me everything you know about chakras. And Aang just goes, what are chakras? He's so naive and young and cute. And that's one of my favorite things about him.
Well, it's also, I mean, I guess unless you grew up in like a culture that deals with chakras, most kids watching would probably be like, are we supposed to know what chakras are? And then it's like, we'll teach you.
Yeah, it's cute. How about you then?
Mine was also the guru. The greatest illusion of this world is the illusion of separation. Things you think are separate and different are actually one and the same. And I love, because that's actually a theme that kind of comes back in a lot of the series and in Korra as well. So I think it's lovely.
Yeah. And Brittany, how about you?
Mine was Toph when she breaks out and like captures the guards who are like transporting her, and she's like, "I am the greatest earthbender in the world. Don't you two dunderheads ever forget it." Because I just love her little like slurs, you know, like her name calling is great, and she's like so pleased with herself, and she is a badass. She's so cool.
Those guys are terrible, and yeah. I love that. So we're going to go into chapter 20, the finale of season 2, The Crossroads of Destiny. We're going to pass over to Brittany to read the synopsis with the appropriate amount of gusto that she feels is deserved by an Ariana recap. We've got a caution explicit language warning on this, but we will do our best to still weave our way around that for any of our little child listeners, if you're out there.
Yes.
Do you want to take it away?
Yes, I have changed a few of Ariana's choice words to fire trucker. So I'm saying fire trucker.
Oh, God. All right.
Okay.
Go.
So chapter 20, The Crossroads of Destiny. In this melodramatically named season finale, Iroh and Zuko get invited to tea at the palace, but surprise, it's Azula. But bigger surprise, Iroh Banff breaks out by breathing fire like a mother fire-trucking dragon. So Zuko and Katara get tossed in together, and since Katara has a history of getting horny in caves, their mounting sexual tension finally comes to a climax as they eye-battle, crying over their mothers. And Katara's like, "Oh my god, Zuko, you're so dreamy and so bad." And Zuko's like, "Hey girl, I've been dreaming of your pheromones since I fondled your necklace in season 1. So Katara stupidly decides to use her magic all-healing special moon powers to make Zuko's sexy scar go away, because she can't help showing off. So they gaze into each other's eyes, and they're about to totally go at it. But then everything changes when Aang clam-jaws the rendezvous. Katara's like, "Dang, Aang," and Zuko's like, "Err." But then Azula shows up, and since she's still got Zuko's ball dangling from her dashboard like a maple air freshener, she decides to betray all of his newfound morals like a little weasel bitch. And Katara's like, "Taylor Swift was right. Bad boys never change, you little John Mayer prick." And Zuko's like, "Hashtag sorry, not sorry. Hashtag lessons learned the hard way." And Aang's like, "Move, bitch. I'm the Avatar." And Azula's like, "Haha, if only somebody loved you." And Katara's like, "Shit, the Avatar's down. I'm going to use my Elsa powers." And Iroh's like, "You little fire truckers." In the end, the gang gets away with the bear because May doesn't even trucking care.
Oh, my God.
I'm not sure what happened, but it was amazing.
Someone on Twitter actually mentioned getting, like, a printed copy of, like, all of the Avatar recaps that we've had so far, like, the written word of all of the Avatar recaps, which I'd be interested in, I'm not going to lie, but,
I want somebody to animate them, just like the show, but put in our dialogue.
Oh, my God. Oh, well, like a fan video of,
Avatar the Abridged series.
Yeah.
Oh my god. It's amazing. Somebody did it on YouTube. It is pretty hilarious.
Oh god. Okay, we'll get into this, shall we? Because I know that you guys all want to talk about Zutara. So apparently the moment you've all been waiting for. Sorry that I'm so skeptical, but I just seriously, I don't know. I never vibed it. I just watch it and I'm just like, this is boring. But the moment that a lot of other people have been waiting for was Zutara in the cave, basically Zuko getting thrown in by Azula.
We should start right there, because when that moment happened, I like paused my like player and I was like, "Oh my god!" I was so excited. Like my whole I was not prepared for it. My whole body like clenched. I was like, "Yes!"
Oh my god, he's serious.
And
it's so weird.
I totally blame the first rewatchable episode I was on, because I feel like that moment they were like, "Oh, well, Zuko and Katara." Someone just happened to offhandedly mention it, and I've been looking for it. So when it happens, I'm like so excited.
I'm happy for you. I'm glad that you had that excitement. I appreciate it. Thank you for your contribution. Anyway, so he gets tossed in the cave by Azula, and she's already tossed in there by, like, basically the actual important plot besides the pretend Zutara is that, you know, that is that Azula and, you know, the Dai Li are kind of taking everything over, you know, arresting all of the other, you know, the Council of Five, etc., all of the people that are not the Dai Li and, you know, that support the Earth King. That sucks. But okay.
Well, the other important thing is that Zuko is like, you know, I'm done running, I'm done being scared of Azula, I'm gonna take this, you know, I'm gonna take this into my own hands and deal with it. And then he gets thrown into the, you know, so that, like, his decision to kind of make a change has happened already, basically.
Yeah, he tries. He you know, his follow-through isn't amazing, but he tries. You know, and we had, obviously, Iroh.
That's Zuko's, like, subtitle. Like,
he tries. His follow-through isn't amazing. Well, look, I'm more impressed by Iroh's Dragon of the West impression, which I'm sorry, but come on. Like, anyway, we'll talk about Zutara. He's just, you know, he's there, apparently. I'm going to just read this. Sorry if there's too much sarcasm injected. I'll try to be very, very non-denominational about Zutara. Zuko is so chill. He's just like, hey, girl, the Fire Nation took away my mom too. He's like that hot loner kid who always wore sunglasses inside and spent his lunch hour playing angry love songs on the bass. No wonder Katara wants him. That's a take on it. I think that he's just pathetic. I don't think he's that cool. I think that I don't get it because I don't think he's that cool. I think he's just really, like hopeless and that it's not, like, this cool, angsty, hot thing, that it's just like on paper, like, Katara's way better than him, like, you know, like, on, you know, she, I don't think that she would fall for him. I don't know, do you think that Zuko has a cool rock star allure, Brittany, or do you think that he's like a pathetic loser?
Well, after his metamorphosis, he's a pathetic loser. Like, I was hoping for, like, Mothra Zuko to come out, not, like, adorable butterfly Zuko. Like, what happened? But before that, yeah, he was the badass. He was like the blue spirit. He was so cool.
Okay.
But we'll see. Hopefully season 3 is better.
Yeah, maybe. Karen, how about you? Did you expect Mothra and were disappointed?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, when he was all happy, that was super weird. Now he's sort of like sad again, which I guess I enjoy more than him being happy. I don't think he's a rock star, and I think objectively there really isn't anything to Zutara, I don't think, just because they really haven't interacted a whole lot. Like, you can count it on a single hand. But the reason why I think I'm so into it is because they're not supposed to be together. You know, she's Water Nation and he's from the Fire People Kingdom. What is it? Fire Nation, I guess?
Fire Nation, Water
okay.
Tribe.
Water Tribe, Fire Nation. I'm trying, guys. I'm trying. It's just okay. A lot to take in. And, you know, they're on opposite sides and they've been sort of battling each other this entire time. And it's just one of those things where, like, the tension between them, not necessarily sexual tension, but just the tension of them being on opposite sides makes you want them to get together. So I think that's why I like it so much.
I mean, I get it objectively, I suppose. I just never got it. I was just like, But I do agree that it is a bit of a sign on Katara's side that she was like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, you know, she kind of hears a little bit of Zuko's story, I guess, basically, you know, that, you know, his mother also went bye-bye. And, you know, he, you know, basically tells about, you know, how he tried to change and the scar and stuff and whatever. And she's like, oh, I've got this magic water. Maybe I could heal your scar. And I'm like, that's, like, not life-threatening at all. Like, he can just have the scar and deal with it. I know it sucks and it would probably, like, help his identity, but it literally isn't hurting him. It's not, like, I mean, it might be hurting him, to be honest. Scar tissue sometimes does. But, you know, it's not killing him. It's not life-threatening. Save your magic water from where someone's dying. Like, seriously, like so that, the fact that she's just like, yeah, let's do this. Like, that maybe gives you an impression of, like, some ridiculous feelings or responses to it. So I don't know. Michal, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I mean, I think this is just, I'm going to use the spirit water on something that doesn't need spirit water is really just a, like, hey guys, remember the spirit water? that was from last season.
Yeah, I think it was definitely like a plug for later. Like,
yeah, for
like, oh, remember, I have this.
Exactly. Like, and I mean, I think it's a powerful moment. And, you know, when Zuko, when she says, like, the face of the Fire Nation, the face of the enemy was always your face. And he touches Scar and he goes, oh, my face. And I mean, I think that's, I don't think that that's like a silly thing. Obviously, I don't think Scar should use this on his face. And I have more feelings about the scar that I'll probably talk about next season. But I think that was like there was a sense there that like this scar is significant in more than just its like its physical presence, you know. And I understand why it was like, why getting rid of the scar might not have seemed as stupid to Katara in the moment as, like, looking back on it, she might be like, oh, yeah, that would have been really stupid, you know?
Actually, that's exactly how I feel, because when I first watched this, I got really excited that she was going to heal him, because it wasn't necessarily like, oh, he's not going to have a scar anymore or anything like that. It was more like it was Katara, of all people, offering Zuko, of all people, this sort of, like, truce and being able to heal him. And maybe once that happened, they would come together and be able to fight on the same side and realize that they do have a lot more in common and that they can be friends. I mean, looking back on it now, yeah, really smart that she didn't end up doing that. But I liked the idea of it more than anything.
Yeah, I get it,
Karen.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yes, it is. Yeah, I do get it as well. But I don't know, that's the whole thing. Every time they're on screen together, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry about this. But every time on screen together, I'm like, ugh, please show me them with anyone else except each other. Like, and it doesn't happen very often. Like, I feel like it's one of the most forced things. And I don't know if it's just because of, like, the outside influence or whatever. I didn't have like a traumatic Zutara experience or something, and like, I don't know, I've just never liked it, and therefore everyone else
you need
else
to
likes
open
it.
Up your heart chakra, Natalie, and
okay,
then
I'll try. We'll see, you know, we've got some room to go, so we'll see by the end of the you know, the series. But I just definitely ship them both with other people more, I suppose. Well, not really Katara, but I don't know. Anyway, let's move on from that. Unless anyone has anything they want to build on just hashtag Zutara5ever, basically, that's not like a specific question. Does anyone have a statement at all?
They're fire and water. How can you not ship it? Fire and water.
Okay. I'm done. All right. I get it. I just don't get it. That's fine. You know, we'll move on from that. And then we have the opinion that Aang knows something, you know, something sus went down, that when he comes back in and he's like, you guys aren't trying to kill each other. Oh my God, you must love each other. Like, you know, so we have a little bit of that and, you know, whatever. Things turn around pretty quickly when basically Azula kind of manipulates him into believing that he can be, like, you know, powerful Fire Prince again. And so there's this moment where they're like, oh, am I going to fight the gang or am I going to fight Azula? Am I going to be on her side and have power with her? Or am I going to take my new metamorphosis change and, you know, my Zen tea drinking job and I'm going to tell her to stick it? Yeah, he doesn't tell her to stick it, guys. He basically just is like, oh, I'm going to shoot some fire at Aang. I'm going to be on your side. We're going to do this together. Because he makes bad choices. So, again, we'll read some direct all-caps commentary from the document saying, Zuko is bad again. Why won't he learn? This is so frustrating. Be a leader and not a follower, Zuko. You are a sheep and Azula rides you like little Bo Peep. Just be your own person. Which, yeah, true, I suppose. Yeah,
you know that, like that gif, like, look at your life, look at your choices, we were rooting for you. That's it.
Yeah, seriously, Tyra was rooting for you, Zuko. Like, you know, it's no good. Seriously, it is a big disappointment this moment. Like, you know, I assume that everyone feels that way. It's just like, dude, you could have just, this could have been your moment, and you flubbed it, basically. And, you know,
you
I think
trust
it's just sort of, yeah, I think, yeah, he did. He totally trucked it. I think that it's just, you know, that he kind of, we can't, you know, however he ends up, we can't get him totally, like, team good and team avatar until he's potentially had a taste of, oh, actually, I could go back to my old life and be an honored fire prince and, like, you know, maybe realize that that isn't, like, you know, for him. That's just sort of a speculation that I was watching the episode and I've never really thought about it. I was like, why? Why at this moment? Like, and I'm not confirming, denying anything for season three, but why at this moment does he not just stick with his convictions? And it's, I think it's because he hasn't experienced, you know, the typical trope would be for him to experience, you know, what he always wanted and then realize he doesn't want it anymore, if you know what I mean. And I think that that is a pretty typical thing. So it's, I'm kind of not that shocked that he made the choice, but it is really annoying. So,
but yeah. Iroh, like, I don't understand. He had this metamorphosis and he's so on board with Iroh and helping Iroh, and then it just goes away. It's so frustrating.
Maybe Azula's good at brainwashing.
Yeah, I was hoping, like, for, like, a quick turnaround in that fight, too, for just be, like, kind of, like, throwing, like, fake punches, like, purposely missing people, and then, like, he'd turn on Azula, but it didn't happen.
Same! I was so disappointed when that didn't happen.
Oh, you thought he was bluffing? Oh, my God, I'm so sad for you. I'm so sad for
you. It was so disappointing in the end.
Ugh! Zuko.
The thing that I keep coming back to is that this is, like, how powerful those desires that you kind of sometimes you think you get over them and you don't, you know, like it's not, you're not always like, just like, oh, I used to want this thing, but that's not who I am anymore. You know, like the pull of that relationship with his father, the pull of that, you know, we've seen how Azula treats Zuko, like even like those flickers of moments where she manipulates him into thinking that they might have a normal sibling relationship are extremely powerful.
And like, that's exactly here. It's like as soon as she's like, you restored your own honor, etc., like, you know, all that crap, whatever it was, you know, he buys it. He just he buys it so easily, and it's just like, yes, this is what I wanted. I remember this is what I wanted. And it's just no. But so I guess that goes into like why is Azula so alluring for people to follow? We obviously have that moment with the Dai Li where she basically takes over, and without even a fight, like Long Fang's like, fine, you win with the power of your witty words.
Guys think was going to happen there? Because that I always thought was a really powerful scene, that Azula actually pulls off this coup. I mean, this Fire Nation princess who these people have no reason to follow whatsoever, you know, that she pulls this off is kind of pretty spectacular to me. So I'm curious what you guys thought about that.
Oh, it doesn't surprise me at all. I completely understand why people follow Azula, and it basically comes down to, I think, one, she's super confident in herself, and people like that in leaders. They don't want somebody who's wishy-washy, and they don't want somebody super naive like the Earth King. And two, she's powerful. She's an incredible firebender, and people are going to side with the person that they think is going to win. So those two elements together, I knew Azula was basically going to get whatever she wanted.
Did you think it was going to go down without a fight? Like, did you think they were going to fight and then follow the winner? Or did you think it was going to literally be like, he was like, I fold?
I mean, I guess I didn't think it was going to be that easy, but I agree that that was a super powerful scene where she was just like, yeah, you know, they're not sure who they want to follow yet, but you know, and I know, and that was just like, oh, I love that part.
Yeah, it was good. Brittany, how about you? What were you kind of expecting there?
I knew that they would follow her. I think the Dai Li just want power, and wherever they can get it, and they recognize it in her. So, like, I mean, my favorite moment, I think, of her, of like, when it was when they were talking, May, was, like, they were talking about how, like, oh, like, you know, we're so lucky to be here with, like, the Fire King's daughter, and, like, blah, blah, blah. And, like, I thought that moment, as soon as she was, like, good job, I was like, all right, well, it's obviously going to happen.
Yeah.
She's so clever that you can't even hate her for it.
Oh, you can, but yeah.
But it's true, Azula is so competent that it's not, like the character kind of, like, does exactly what she wants to you know, but it's like,
I suppose,
right,
yeah.
You're the bad guy, sorry.
Yeah, but it is really interesting. It is, because she's so, like, extreme, and it does go, obviously, too far in the other direction. Uncle Iroh breathes fire like a mother fire-trucking dragon. Anyone got any comments on that? Like, yes, he does. It's awesome. He's really, 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 really good at everything. He just doesn't like to really, like, you know, do it. He just wants to make tea, which, you know, is a choice that people should just respect and leave him alone. So what do you think is going to happen to him now, Brittany? Like, where do you think we'll see Iroh in season 3 now that he's been like, go away, creepy relatives, leave the Avatar alone, you need to get out of here, etc.?
Well, what's so interesting about this, sorry, Brittany.
No, it's okay. Go ahead,
It's so interesting that Iroh has, like, where Zuko has, like, pedaled back and pretended that he's not, like, been on that side, Iroh has completely, like, thrown in his like, lot with the other guys, you know?
Yeah.
And like, so he's, like,
he is now clearly a traitor. Like, he is now, you know, clearly a traitor. Like, they know that he is not the, you know, on their side. He's not just, like, a benevolent failed dictator or whatever it was that he was doing, that he has chosen his side and it's not with them, basically, not with Azula. So, yeah, where do you think that will lead him for season 3? Karen, any ideas?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that the fire breathing scene, my favorite part of that was that Zuko knew exactly what was going to happen, and like they just sort of looked at each other and they were like, he was prepared. And I just love how they can be on the same page like that. I really like the respect that he has for Iroh. As for season 3 and what Iroh's going to be doing, I agree. He is definitely a traitor now. He's all in with the Avatar. And what I really hope is two things. One, I want him to just like chill with Toph, because I really like their friendship, and I think that could be an amazing thing. And two, I want him to sort of be at the point, like, lead the group into maybe convincing Zuko that this is not who he is, and he can be so much better than this, because I just need Zuko to not be a bad guy, and I really want Iroh to be the one to finally convince him of that, because he's been really close. And I think he just needs an extra little push, and I want Iroh to be the one to do that.
No, I think that's fair. Okay, so some other little
things. I think I interrupted Brittany talking about...
Oh, sorry, yes. Brittany, how about you in terms of Iroh and what he's sort of done to himself now, basically?
Well, I thought it was really interesting when he, like, when... This goes back to, I think, the last episode where he walks up to the palace and the Earth Kingdom, and he's like, who would have thought that, like, I'd be entering this as a guest? And I feel like he's really, like, come to peace with, like, his failures as a leader in the Fire Nation. And so I think that it's really interesting, like, especially in this episode when he makes his choice to go with the other people. Like, he has completely resigned himself from the Fire Nation. And it, like, was sort of subtly stated last episode before this, but this episode, like, when he's choosing to actively fight against the Earth Kingdom in order to protect the Avatar. Like, I think that I like it. I like where Iroh's going, but I hope we get a little bit more of, like, badass Iroh and not just tea-making Iroh, because I really liked watching... I love watching him fight. He's very talented.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay. So a few little other things in this episode before we finish up. There's a couple of cool things that we just want to give a shout-out to, like Upper and the boys finding Toph earth surfing away from the world, like from the captors, which I love. And then Ty Lee's and May's fight with Sokka and the others. So, you know, Ty Lee and Sokka often sort of take on each other. See, I ship that, even though I ship him with Suki and all his other dead girlfriends. I ship Sokka and Ty Lee. I way more than Zutara. Like, that is vibey. Like, I love that. So does anyone else like that kind of their interaction so far?
I mean, I get it, but it's only been, like, it hasn't been too... It hasn't got caught on my radar too much, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Zutara. I'm not actively looking for this one.
Oh, okay. I don't think I was ever actively looking for anything. So I understand if I was like, you know, oh my God, you're going to watch this show and you're totally going to ship this thing. And then I was like looking for it and waiting for it. Like, if you know what I mean, I probably would feel differently. But, Ty Lee and Sokka, I don't know, I find them funny. But, And then as we also see, obviously, May at the end is just, she just doesn't care. Basically, they've been left to look after the bear and clean up poop, and she doesn't care anymore, which is also amazing. Now, look, we've got an opinion here that I would, you know, I don't necessarily agree, but let's see. You know, we're questioning, okay, for real, though, if Zutara isn't real, then the writers are just trolling with us this episode. Normal strangers don't stare into each other's eyes like that. Okay, objective question, non-crazy fandom shipping question. This moment between Zuko and Katara, not that I even vibe the staring that much, but do you think that it was objectively written as a potential romantic moment that then got dashed because of things? Like, do you think that it was actually intended as a romantic tension moment? So,
no,
Nicole,
absolutely not. Sorry, no? I jumped in before you were able to dictate who was going to speak.
please go ahead. So you don't
think
it was
written as... No, I don't think it was written as... Yeah, I don't think it was written intentionally as a romantic moment. I think it was written as a we're going to realize that we're not so different moment. Like, that could eventually, yes, in my opinion, lead to a romance, but it was more of a, like, they haven't spent too much time in each other's company where it's not, like, a battle going on or something's happening, and, like, they're kind of trapped. They have nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
So I think this was one of those moments where they're like, okay, we're going to put these two in a room and just... make them see a different side of each other, not necessarily like have them like, you know, bang, but,
well, no, but yeah. I'm surprised I didn't like this scene more because I usually love the like, oh my god, enemies stuck in close quarters together having to deal with each other. I love that, totally love that, but yeah, I didn't know whether it was meant to be like a moment of like, oh, intense, you know, if it was just feelings, you know, whether it was just, you know, oh, enemies that aren't so different, or if it was like, oh, hot teenage boy, hot teenage girl, ooh, my little annoying sidekick isn't here to be obsessed with me, ooh, if you know what I mean. Mikhail, how about you? Did you, I don't know if they've said anything about this, like, you know, off screen, but was this, you know, to you actually objectively meant to be a moment of any kind of romance?
I mean, I don't think it's, like, romantic in and of what it is, but I think that it's, like, I think it opens, it could open the door. I mean, these guys, like, have barely interacted, you know, so, because they're enemies, and that's part of why we ship them, because they're on opposite sides. And, you know, so seeing this, seeing them have a conversation, seeing them connect, seeing them find, you know, mutual ground that they can relate on is... I mean, yes, it's a shipper's dream. I don't even think it matters if it's supposed to be like, oh my gosh, I could love you now. It's just like they theoretically would have been in a very different place had this played out with Zuko not making the, you know, character authentic but terrible choice that he does.
Yeah. I'd be really curious to see, you know, whether there was ever any kind of canonical intention of Zutara that was then, you know, that they changed their mind about at this moment, or, you know, I don't know too much behind the scenes about that, but I'm always curious about that kind of thing, like with past moments and things like that. Karen, how about you? Did you think this was trolling?
No, I didn't. And I agree that it wasn't intended to be romantic. I think that, a lot of it, like Brittany said, had to do with, oh, we're not so different after all. I think that that part could lead to something more. And I mean, obviously, like, we read into this stuff a whole lot more than we're probably supposed to, but, you know, that's half the fun. And I think that, yeah, this could be the beginning of something, because now that they've realized that they are quite similar, and they could be on the same side if Zuko didn't make terrible decisions.
Yeah. I think the most important thing is that Katara learned that, like, you know, Zuko is not, like, an evil, malicious dictator, basically. That he...
Well,
you know,
she didn't think so before.
Well, you know, he may be now, but, you know, for a moment, she realized a little bit of what was going on with him, and then whatever. Mikhail, did we sort of cover your question about whether they saw the decision coming, or do we sort of want to pose that specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you guys did. I'm just, you know, I remember when I watched it, I was like, oh my god, no way! Even even though now I kind of can't see it ending any other way. So were you guys like, were you freaking out or were you like, oh, he's going to make the wrong decision?
I wasn't freaking out because I thought he was bluffing the whole time. Yeah, and then we learned that he wasn't. And I was like, seriously?
I'm so sad about that. That must be the most disappointing.
It was.
Yeah, because I kept waiting for the whole fight for him to just like, like look like he was like about to like throw a giant fireball at Katara and then whip around and hit his sister. But he threw it at Katara. Like, no. Just.
Ugh. Yeah, no. Sorry, that must suck really badly. But. Oh,
but sorry, guys, though, it is so good though. There's some things that happen that, like, you're just like, I would hate the show without this.
Season 3 is so good. It's so good. I don't...
Actually, Season 2 is way better than Season 3, in my opinion, but we'll see.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm curious to what you mean, though, about the stuff being so good that wouldn't happen without this.
Well, there's...
I'm sure I can think of many things. Yeah. The repercussions of this... they're not good in terms of, like, quote-unquote good, but they're freaking amazing. Like, you will die. Season 3, you will die. Literally
die. Does a comet actually come? Because I feel like it's not happening now. This comet has been just, like...
Yes! The comet is not fake. Let's say that. The comet exists.
That's like the most frustrating part of the show is like you can watch like 7 episodes and then you're like, wait a minute, where's the comet?
To give sort of an impression, I'm pretty sure this entire journey of the 3 seasons is like 9 months to a year. It's not like taking place over like 6 weeks. It's not like, but it's also not just like, oh my god, it's all 6 weeks. Like, you know.
Yeah, because I mean, I know it's coming in the summer, but I also just don't know what season it is because.
We haven't seen them, like, you know, the weather's always really nice. So, let's go through the favorite scenes quickly and finish up. Mine was actually just the gang's reaction to Iroh knocking at the door. Like, you know, when, they answer and Toph's like, hey, and the boys are like, like, I just love that so much. And again, it kind of hammers home the same thing, you know, in the past episode where I was like, Katara, just leave Zuko alone to live his life in the tea shop. But then I realized they don't know that he's technically just trying to chill in the same way that Aang and Sokka don't know that Iroh isn't a bad guy. And I sort of forget that they don't know that they're not bad guys, but yeah, I love that bit. Karen, how about you?
# Zutara.
Oh, good. it surely is an epic moment for the series. Michal, how about you?
So I just picked like everything, but specifically I love Aang and Iroh's little like talk about life and love and tea and stuff when they were going down, because like those two like don't talk really, and that's just an amazing moment, especially since we know that Iroh is like so much better than even like Aang thinks he is. I also love, I guess I'll just say like one little thing that I love, that shot where Katara sends that like line of water at Azula and you're like, oh wow, that's a powerful line of water, and then she leans back and it slices her hair off. So it was a freaking, like, blade of water that would have, like, sliced her in half. And it's just, I love
Some of the weapon stuff is getting pretty intense, like, with ice blades and, like, the way the Dai Li use, like, rocks is basically, like, bullets and stuff. Mm-hmm. The weapon stuff is getting pretty intense. Iroh in the cave with Aang I really love because he gives, the total opposite opinion of, like, you know, that... you know, the stuff you have now is the most important, and like power is totally overrated and stuff, which is true for him, as probably the Avatar needs to take a little bit more responsibility, but I really liked his take on it as well. So Brittany, how about you for the scenes?
Zuko tumbling down into the crystal prison cell.
Were you screaming? Did you freak out?
It was a lot of emotion happening at once. A lot of arm waving.
Yeah. With quotes, now I've been waiting literally 2 seasons to be able to use this, like, to be able to put this as my favorite quote, and it's at the end when, you know, they're, you know, getting the Earth King out of the palace, and they basically go up to the throne room, because he's not leaving without Bosco, and they just walk in, and Mae just looks at them and goes, just take the bear, because she's 100% done with them. And you don't know how often I say, just take the bear, in like day-to-day life. It's like a staple quote in my life from pop culture, and I'm obsessed with it. So yeah. And I literally got in here as soon as the doc went up to put it in, even though I hadn't done the rest of my preparation for the episodes. I think before I watched the episodes today, I put the quote in. So yeah, that's my feelings about just take the bear. Karen, go ahead.
The first part of mine is from Katara when she says, the Fire Nation took my mother away from me. And then Zuko says, I'm sorry, that's something we have in common. And I really feel like this was a turning point, or I thought it was, until Zuko did everything that he did. But perhaps it'll have lasting significance anyway, and they'll come back to this and understanding that they are also quite similar in a lot of ways. Who knows?
Yeah, it's nice. I always find it a bit odd that, well, not odd, I sort of understand it, but that they avoid saying, like, confirming deaths, if you know what I mean. Like, not just because, oh, who might be alive, but when they never say that Katara's mother's dead, if you know what I mean. They're never like, you know, we don't even, like, really know what happened to her, but they're never like, oh, the Fire Nation killed my mother, if you know what I mean. They you know, it's just like, they took her away from me. So does that make you curious about Katara's mother at all, or do you think that we know what happened to her?
I mean, I think we've discussed this before, sort of.
Her mother is the Fire Lord.
That there's a lot, like, they don't specifically say what happened, but we do know what happened because of, like, outside material. I don't know. I always kind of hoped that she would come back and, like, save the day, but I don't think that's realistic.
Like Jet, you know? Yeah. Oh, good old Jet. Dead Jet. Anyway, Mikhail, how about you for the quotes?
Okay, let me get myself into this right mindset. Is Zula saying, the fact is, they don't know which one of us is going to be sitting on that throne and which one is going to be bowing down, but I know, and you know. And I just think that's like...
Oh, she's so terrible. I mean, it's
but she's so good. How do you, you know, I love when she gets these little speeches where she's just, like, completely in control. And I mean, this one I don't care.
She's 14 years old. I can't even deal with it.
She's like, Ozai's daughter, man. I mean, like, that's, like, but the thing is, like, the reason why it's easier for me to, like, not hate this is because she's doing it to like, what's his name? The Dai Li guy.
Long Feng. Because he's also gross and evil.
Right, exactly. So it's not like I'm like, oh no, like I appreciate your maniacalness, but like when she has that amazing speech in the premiere to the ship captain, it's like, yeah, but I feel really bad for the ship captain. This I'm just like,
and,
yeah,
like,
whatever.
When she's mean to Iroh and stuff, like,
right.
Anyway, Brittany, how about you for quotes?
Mine was when Iroh first shows up and with, like, to ask for help, and Iroh goes, I know how you must feel about my nephew, but believe me when I tell you there is good inside him. And Sokka replies, good inside of him isn't enough, why don't you come back when it's outside of him too, okay?
I love that. It's
so great.
Ridiculous. Yeah, that was a very, very, very good one for funny. So just to round up the episode, basically that's all from us from season 2, and we'll be back with season 3, you know, next week, which is exciting. If you want to reach us, you can do that at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com or at re_watchable on Twitter. Any feedback for this episode or, you know, non-spoilery comments for what we have coming up. You can reach us on this post on Hyperbole. We also would like to invite you to review the episode on iTunes, which, you know, as usual,
my
we have
God.
Some great.
Why do I put up with you guys? Seriously.
All right. If you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, then Karen will shave her hair into a little angsty ponytail and then cut it off and then grow it out again to some appropriately sideswept bang sexy length, and then I bang you in a cave with some light petting. Karen, I hope that that's consensual, but if it's not, sorry, Ariana's sold you out as a sex slave for 5-star iTunes reviews.
I mean, we really appreciate it when people give us 5-star iTunes reviews, but... Wow.
At what cost? At what cost?
I mean, is it bad that I would rather have this one than somebody witness the birth of my firstborn child? What does that say about me?
No, I think witnessing childbirth is gross, so I don't know. Okay. I don't know if I'd want to shave all my hair off into an angsty little ponytail. Anyway, 5-star iTunes reviews, we'd really appreciate it. You know, Karen Rewards is up to, you know, proximity, I suppose. But, you know, just bring in a screen cap of your review and then we'll you know, set up a time. Listener feedback a little bit from what I mentioned earlier. Princess Taylor, which is Twitter, at Princess T Taylor. You guys should compile all rewatchable gang synopsises in written form. Hashtag I want that. Hashtag hype host humor. Hashtag classic Ariana. Ariana has said, I know this tweet will look suspiciously like I wrote it. I swear on Dead Suki's grave I did not. It was literally the only feedback we got this week. Hashtag sorry I'm not sorry. I now have my own hashtag. So Ariana was, found that tweet for us. Is very, very pleased. She definitely didn't write it herself. But we didn't have much other feedback last week. So if you'd like to leave some big finale feedback, we can do a big section next week, which I believe, don't necessarily quote me on this, but I believe we're doing the premiere episode by itself because we have an uneven number of episodes in that season. So we will have time for a fair bit of feedback if anyone wants to give their thoughts on the season as a whole or, you know, anything like that. So that would be great, and we will see you all then. So until then, I've been Natalie.
I'm Karen.
I am still Michal.
And I am still Brittany.
Yay! Hey. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye, guys. Stay on the side of evil.
No!
Why?